Nashua.com.
Well, good morning, Nashua. It's a gorgeous fall morning out there. The trees are starting to turn. This is Karen Testerman on WSMN 1590 with We Hold These Truths, sponsored by First Principles. It's absolutely gorgeous out there, nice and crisp. My nephew was up from Texas and said, oh, I love this New England weather. And yes, we do. Today, we have as our guest, Kevin Kikuchi. I'm sorry, Kevin. Does everybody butcher your name as badly as I did?
Yes, it's Kikuchi.
Kikuchi. Okay, well, maybe that'll make it a little bit easier if I put the emphasis on the right syllable.
Exactly.
But Kevin was an attorney who had founded an organization called the Lynchpins of Liberty. And he suddenly found himself in the middle of what we have found to be a little bit of scrutiny and intimidation by a department of our government called the Internal Revenue Service. And so I heard Kevin a couple of weeks ago and have been trying to get him online so that we could have a discussion about what was going on. So, Kevin, would you give us a little bit of background on your story?
Sure. Yeah, Kevin Kikuchi, and I founded an organization called Lynchpins of Liberty, which is an American leadership development enterprise. Our motto is to challenge the imagination of the rising generation. And we do this by mentoring high school and college students in conservative political philosophy to give them a taste for freedom and the skills to be free. It was an organization that I founded, really developed out of homeschooling our children. When my children started reaching seventh grade, I would teach Western civilization around our dining room table, and as each child got to that age, they would invite their friends, the other homeschoolers in the community, into our house. We used Russell Kirk's Roots of American Order as our text, and that expanded into teaching other students in the community on a one-on-one basis, sort of like mission work, really. And as that expanded, there seemed to be an interest, and a word-of-mouth sort of passed that I had an interest in teaching the rising generation. And it also stemmed out of at the time I was the treasurer of the Williamson County Republican Party, and they had asked me they'd asked the board if anyone was interested in teaching students, but they were more interested in teaching them about political activity. And I said, I'll be glad to teach them, but I said, I'm going to take a different angle, because you can teach a student about how to raise money, how to get grassroots support, media training, and they can just as easily be used against you by the other side of the political spectrum. I said, but if you give them the right tools and you teach them the right books to read, I said, they will forever know and not have to be told to get involved. They will, out of their knowledge, want to get involved in the process. So that was the genesis of it. Then you move forward to January 2nd, 2011. And by the way, if I go on, the story, I can go on forever. So if you want to interject or redirect me, please do. Otherwise, I'll just keep going until you say stop.
Okay, that sounds great. That's a great idea.
Okay, so in January of 2011, I filed my application with the IRS seeking tax-exempt status as a 501c3, a nonprofit and educational organization. And it was not until May of that year that I received any response from the IRS, and the first response gave me a good sense of what was probably going on, because the letter had numerous questions that were not only in violation of my constitutional rights, but it was clear that they were meant to harass and intimidate me.
Well, let me interrupt you right there, sure. Kevin, because I have filed an application for a 501c3 organization in the state of New Hampshire, I just want to give people a sense of what's normal for or what was normal for an application. Usually you get you submit your application, and within about 6 weeks to 2 months, you will have received a letter acknowledging that you have, your application has been received. If you have any missing documents or anything, they may ask you to resubmit those. But generally, within that 2 to 3 month period, you've got a letter that says that we are examining what you have submitted, and you will receive your letter of determination that gives you a trial period for about 5 years of, in which you will be watched to see if you are complying with what you said you were going to do. And then at the end of that 5 years, you would get a permanent status. So you're on a temporary, but generally that comes within about 6 months. So just to give the people an idea of what was normal back when I did this in 2000. So
right.
Go ahead.
Well, you are correct, Karen. In fact, prior to 2010, the average time it took for a 501c3 to receive that first letter of determination that you referred to was between 2 and 4 months. That's the whole process. You get, after 30 days, typically, you would get that first letter. And we did get that first letter that said, we're examining your files, but then we didn't get another response for another 4 months. But not only was it a much shorter window at that time, but the nature of the questions were purely administrative. Have you filed your state papers? Do your state papers match your federal papers? Have you filed a conflict of interest? Have you attached a conflict of interest policy, making sure that the officers of the nonprofit are not benefiting from this? Basic questions, usually one page and 4 or 5 questions, and then you're approved. The IRS approves over 600,000 C3s every year. It was not anything more than an administrative process. Clearly, it changed the political, as I'll get into it. One of the important things is that I walk in a community of people who associate with a lot of people who politically think like I do, and we have share very much the same view about the size and the scope and the proper nature of the government. Yet even in 2011, when I received my first letter from the IRS, I had a very good friend of mine who rolled his eyes at me when I suggested that the IRS is targeting me. He didn't want to believe. I think he felt that, now that's conspiracy, Kevin. And I stopped the conversation at that point because I knew that he wasn't going to get it. I knew there wasn't understanding. I felt this was not a good argument to have at this point. Well, from May of 2011 until the end of December of 2011, I made every attempt I could to get a hold of the IRS. I called, I wrote, I filed the answers that I felt I was obligated to file. I did not answer the questions that I felt were violative of my rights. But it was the inability to get a hold of anyone and no response from the IRS that bothered me most. During this time, I was promised a grant from a reputable nonprofit that gives grants to a lot of sub-nonprofits. The executive director looked at my application. He liked what the organization was about. He read my mission statement. They submitted it to their board, and they approved me for a $30,000, what I would say is a launch grant. He said, as soon as you get your letter of determination, come in, we'll sign this paperwork, and we'll give you your grant. And for me, that was a form of credibility. It lent credibility to the new organization. I could take that to other organizations to say, this organization has granted me $30,000. Will you double that? Will you match it? And you know how that goes in the nonprofit world.
Yes.
Well, when we got to the end of the year, he starts scratching his head saying, Kevin, never in my 25 years of making grants has this ever taken so long. I don't understand why this would be taking so long. And he wasn't willing to go all the way down the road with me as to why that might be happening, because I think most people were hesitant to accuse, hesitant to consider that this could really be happening. Nobody wanted to. But on December 30th, or maybe 30, no, 31st, it was New Year's Eve, 2011, I finally got a hold of an IRS agent, the third one that had been put on my case, by the way. And I asked him quite plainly, I said, why in the world is my application taking so long? And he could tell, and he knew, off the top of my head, I forget his name, it's in the file, but at the time, Ron Bell was his name. He said to me, yes, we have been waiting for guidance from our superiors as to your organization and many similar organizations. We have now received that guidance, and you will receive your response on a first-in, first-out basis. Well, there again, if I suspected it in May of 2011, that put the nail in the coffin for me. I knew what kind of letter I was going to get, and sure enough, 8 weeks later, I got the letter that most people have now seen all over the Internet and have been subject of testimony. About a 95-part questionnaire asking me donor names, asking me for my organization, because I work with students. The most disturbing part of that process was that they wanted me to identify the students that I was teaching, some of whom are minors, and to tell them the locations where I was teaching them, They wanted to know the political affiliation of my own mentors. All of these things, which are clearly not only violative of the law, but meant to harass and intimidate.
And where was their warrant?
Where
was the warrant? Aren't they supposed to provide you with a warrant for such, when they want to have such information? I mean,
you would think, right?
I mean, it's almost like they showed up at your door and said, "Okay, we want to now go through all your files."
Exactly. It's in that regard, guilty until proven innocent. Yeah, it was very disturbing. The only comfort in that process was about 6 hours after I received my letter, it became obvious that I wasn't the only one, and all over the internet and email correspondence and even some press began picking up that the virtually identical letters had been sent to all of these organizations across the country who shared one thing, and that was our ideas. We did not believe in the expansion of the federal government. We felt that government should be limited and that our rights come from God, not from government. You can go down the line. All of these organizations had those things in common.
Let me identify us for a minute, Kevin. This is Karen Testerman with We Hold These Truths on WSMN 1590, and we are speaking with Kevin Kukuji, who is
Kukuji.
All right, I'll get it by the end of the hour. But he established an organization called Lynchpins of Liberty, an American leadership development enterprise, to teach young people not only how the process works, but why the process works. So yes. Go ahead, Kevin.
Well, the step that we took then in March of 2012 is we had the great blessing of being represented and having representation offered to us by the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow. Coincidentally, when I was in law school in the late 80s, I remember watching Jay Sekulow as a young attorney on television, a First Amendment attorney at that time. And so he's someone that I've always admired and watched from afar, and it was quite an honor to have this stellar organization taking on the case. Originally, however, there were a couple hundred, we were on a conference call with a couple hundred Tea Party and Liberty-based groups, and many of them declined to be represented solely because they didn't want any more intimidation or harassment from the IRS. But there were about 30 to 40 of us who said, "We don't care. This is a matter of principle. We don't care whether we get status at this point. I mean, we do want status, but what was more important was that the justice be done."
Absolutely.
And so we wanted to be in this fight. So from that point, from March of 2012 until May of 2013, it was an administrative process only. The initial hubbub that was in the press died down, and no lawsuit had been filed. What the ACLJ was doing at that point was answering each of our letters on our behalf with the IRS on a case-by-case basis, and I would hear from the attorneys every 6 weeks or so with a status, here's your application, helping them with that process. Well, all of that changed on May 10th, 2013. And May 10th, 2013 is the day that your listeners may recall that Lois Lerner formulated an artificial apology based on a planted question at an ABA event on a Friday afternoon, hoping, as we know, that this would be a late Friday afternoon news dump, that everyone would forget it by Monday morning. And this is when my life began to change and turn upside down in a way that I had never anticipated or expected at that point. So, Lois Lerner's apology consisted basically of an admission. She knew that Inspector General's report was coming out, and this is why she tried to get ahead of it. Inspector General's report was going to disclose that the IRS had indeed targeted some of these organizations for their political views. Lois Lerner said, "Well, it was just a few rogue agents in Cincinnati that were responsible for this, no big deal." Well, I knew immediately, because of my conversation with Ron Bell back in December of 2011, that this was patently false. I'd had a conversation with a gentleman who had no reason to tell me anything other than the truth at that time. And although he didn't describe where his instructions came from, he was very clear that it was not from Cincinnati. He was in Cincinnati, but he said my superiors that had authorized this were clearly not down the hall. So I began reaching out to some of my contacts in D.C. who I knew could get me a hearing with the committees who would be considering congressional testimony, and by Monday, that would be, let's see, the 10th, 11th, 12th, the 13th of May, I woke up in the morning intending to call my mother for my weekly call just to check in with her in Pennsylvania. And lo and behold, I couldn't get a hold of her until Saturday that week because the media explosion was so large. I started off on a local radio show, then it went to regional media, all the local television stations, then national. Wall Street Journal does a feature piece on me about this matter. I hear my name on Rush Limbaugh. I see it all over the Drudge Report. It's exploding. I'm on Megyn Kelly's show and all these other Fox programs. It just took on a life of its own over the next 5 or 6 days, which led then over the next 3 weeks building toward our testimony, which was on June 4th. But before I get into that, I didn't want to ramble on here. If you had questions, and I don't know what your
You're fine. I just think it's absolutely fascinating. Now, so what did you, when you were on that phone call with all of these other people, had other organizations been experiencing the same depth of inquiry that you were?
Yes. In fact, it's ironic that we all got almost identical letters, save for a few questions that were directed specifically to each organization's needs or maybe situations. I would say if you take these letters, 90% of them were the same exact questions, which, interestingly enough, I don't know if you saw yesterday, but USA Today, there was an article in USA Today yesterday, it was at least the online version, with a list of all of the organizations that the IRS had targeted, 130 or so initially. It got up to over 500. And my organization was on there, Lynchpins, and so I followed over, sort of surreal looking at this, because this was a document created by the IRS back in 2011, explaining internally among themselves why they were targeting us. So when I looked at Lynchpins of Liberty, in the notes column, it said that, well, he's a C3, he may be okay, but he might be participating in political activities, and we need to further question that. Well, if that was the case, that their concern was I was participating in political activities, there is no reason that they should have sent me a 95-point questionnaire. Those political activities, concerns of theirs, which were not validated, they weren't true, still could have been addressed in probably 5 or 10 questions.
Well, and
very specific to that.
And in reality, under the 501c3, there is the just if you don't apply for the extra exemption, there is an exemption that you could call the, I think it's the H exemption anyway, that you can apply for that allows you to be involved a little bit more heavily in issue advocacy. But it's still...
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're right, Karen. Issue advocacy is never off limits in this regard, and that
right. And so, you know, you're allowed to do that without any. The only thing that is restricted is the endorsement of candidates or the actual
right.
campaigning for candidates.
That's right. And my, it was so obvious. they had printed out all of my web pages. They had printed out my newsletters because they sent them to me saying, "This is what we found on your site. If there's any more, let us know." And it was so plain. I mean, my model, because my wife and I have been longtime supporters and friends of the Heritage Foundation, I've got a lot of my influence philosophically came from my relationship with the Heritage Foundation. I modeled the organization as far as making sure we were clean with respect to what issues we were allowed to get involved with Heritage. So if my organization was doing something wrong, then the biggest, most important and most significant conservative think tank in the world is doing something wrong, because all I was doing was modeling my little program on a much smaller scale after what they were doing. And the IRS knew this. This is why it was clear that they were targeting me not for what I was doing, but for the content of my ideas.
Right. And quite honestly, it wasn't just organizations. There have been individuals that were also targeted specifically. So, just to mention that.
Yes. So at that point, when it became, when Lois Lerner admitted that there had been this targeting, the ACLJ immediately filed a lawsuit on behalf of, at the time, we had, I think, down to 25 clients were on the initial filing of the lawsuit. We are now up to over 40 now on this lawsuit. And Lynchpins of Liberty is the lead plaintiff. So if you look up the case, you can find it filed under Lynchpins of Liberty et al. Versus United States of America, Eric Holder. And we're suing not only the United States and the IRS and the individuals in their official capacity, but there is a very narrow legal ruling by a Supreme Court called in the Bivens case back in the 70s that actually allows plaintiffs who are damaged under color of violation of their constitutional rights to sue the actual individuals in their personal capacity.
That's
so some of these individuals that were involved in this matter have now been required to get their own personal counsel because they're being sued individually, not just in their official capacity. And so that, you know, the wheels of justice move slowly in that regard. So that process is likely to take as long as the administration wants to drag its feet in providing answers. But there's going to come a time where they're going to have to produce documents in discovery, and that's when it's going to get really interesting. We already know from congressional, even a little bit of documents that they're turning over to the congressional investigators, they're starting to learn a lot. Well, in the discovery process, it's a lot easier to get that. It's a lot easier because you've got a judge that's overseeing it. You don't have to take it to the judge. It's already part of the process. So the documents are going to be forced to be turned over, and I think at that point the IRS is going to start to perhaps change the nature of the way it approaches the response. But I imagine they're going to try to drag it out as long as they can for political purposes and not have to disclose this, just as they did with these organizations. Because remember, this was happening before the 2012 elections.
Exactly.
And even though my organization was not at all involved in electioneering, or that wasn't the point of my organization, there were other organizations in this lawsuit and who had been targeted who were clearly allowed to be more involved in that as C4s, not C3s. And the purpose the IRS was going after them was to keep them from being effective in raising money to raising money against what we would know who's done the 2012 election, Barack Obama. I mean, it's so obvious now that that was the intent. And I might say, by the way, remember earlier in this conversation I explained about the friend of mine who, when this first came about in May of 2011, he rolled his eyes at me. Well, this past summer, after this all came to a head, he took me out to lunch, and he apologized profusely. He said, Kevin, not only were you right, but he says it's worse than even you had told me that it would be. So he apologized forever. You know, he knew. And I said, look, I knew that you felt that way. I said, I was just going to let it work its way out. But it's good to know that people finally have awakened to the reality.
Absolutely. Now, Kevin, you know, I'm always mindful of the young people who are watching what goes on, especially those who have been your students in prior times. And as this started to unfold, did you get some reaction from your students?
Yes, and as you might imagine, it was twofold. There was both shock and extreme interest because young people are interested, number one, if it's on television and it's all over the internet, that gets their attention more than the mundane of sitting in college. You know, a lot of the students that I've worked with are now in college. So there was that excitement, which was good because they were paying attention. But it clearly was shock. And I did not, by the way, I did not disclose one student's name to the IRS. There's no way I was going to do that. Could you imagine, especially with the minors, if I turned to the parents whose students I am teaching, can you imagine what they would say? I could be sued if I turn over the names of their minor students and where they live to the IRS. And yet under threat of perjury, if I don't, then I'm the one that's at risk. I mean, the IRS really puts you in a box in that regard, which is why we filed the lawsuit. But yeah, the students were immediately interested. Still a very small group, which is probably a point that I should address a little bit here. I find it interesting that I was deemed a threat by the Obama administration and the current IRS. I'm a one-man organization. I never established a board of directors because I couldn't get traction. I wasn't going to be able to raise money because they shut me down before I got out the gate.
That's true.
I had done this informally, and I still do it, and I still teach, and I teach in my community, and I teach people all over the country on a mentor relationship, but I don't raise any money. I just do it without regard to the IRS. But it's funny to me that they deemed me to be such a threat, because in the letter, you would think that I was this giant organization that had contacts with big moneyed groups, and I was raising lots of money. And if you look at my 990 filing, my IRS tax information form, it's pathetic how little money we're talking about here. And even the other groups that were raising more money than I was raising are not significant. I mean, it's drops in the bucket. We're talking probably total, cumulatively, among all the 40 groups, we're probably talking about less than $100,000.
Yes.
All of them together.
Yeah.